Hello, I'm here today with my brother Jeff, who works here at Heart Cry and travels throughout Asia, checking on the works and the missionaries that we have throughout that area of the world. And he just returned from a trip in India, and so we're going to ask him about it, and I hope that it will be not only a blessing, but an encouragement to you to think about and get involved in missions according to how God has graced you, according to his calling. Well, thank you for being here, Jeff.
My pleasure.
So, tell us about the trip.
Well, the trip was long. So, it was 2.5 weeks of a lot of travel. And I can say that it was busy and fruitful. Was in 5 different locations in India, some in the south, some in the north. Preached over 18 times.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's good.
So it was busy. If I was not in an airplane, if I was not in a car, it felt like I was behind the pulpit. But it was a good trip. It was a really good trip. We preached 2 1-day conferences. The first conference was on, Can a True Christian Lose His Salvation? And then the second 1-day conference looked at finishing the race well.
Now, that first conference, that's so important in light of much of the theology in India.
Oh,
is that not true? Most would believe that... That you can fall away.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was surprised at the response. I think most people responded to the doctrine of total depravity. It's almost as if some of them had never even heard that before. So I think it was when they started to understand what total depravity was, and then the work of Christ and justification and what happens within the believer at salvation and regeneration, it kind of, the lights kind of came on.
Yeah, you know, I've been amazed at my preaching in Asia or to those who are from Asia, that in many places in Asia, the emphasis in the preaching is following Jesus, following Jesus. And of course, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Jesus commands. But when I ask them, what's your hope of salvation? Their hope of salvation is that they're following Jesus enough. Or properly and totally bypassing the doctrine of justification by faith.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you could tell even in the question and answering sessions that things were moving in their heads. They were asking questions that were on point with what they should be asking.
Yeah.
So it was really good.
Because no one can honestly have any peace of mind, I would think, as long as they believe that they have to contribute something to their salvation.
Right.
I know I would be at an absolute loss.
Yeah, me too.
Well, what else?
Yeah, so then we were able to go out to a village. So it was like 3 hours outside of a major city there in India. Just a royal village, and got to teach for 2 days, 8 sessions, just on the foundations of a healthy church. The gospel message, what the gospel is, what the gospel is not, what you cannot promise in the gospel, what the gospel truly does promise. And so 2 days out there as well, preached to 40 to 50 pastors, excellent response. And then I was able to also go preach in a couple Sunday services, really connect with our missionaries once again, made new contacts, deepened existing relationships, and just really got into their lives.
Now, in that conference, you talked about telling them what the gospel does promise and what it doesn't promise. Were in the part about what it doesn't promise, were you referring to the maybe the prosperity gospel?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And
that, what about that in India? How big is that?
Yeah, Indian tradition and Hinduism basically will have you go to worship at a temple to see what you can gain. So if you want a good crop for your season, you're going and going sacrifice at the Hindu temple. And a lot of the tradition tends to get carried over into the Christian culture as well, which is a mistake. So we have pastors standing in the pulpit promising healthy crops or a healthy marriage or a number of other things, health, wealth, prosperity, as we all know.
Now, you said Indian culture, but is some of that the influence from the prosperity preachers in the U.S.?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And India takes it to the extreme. So we see the prosperity preaching in the U.S., and then India will turn that and put it on its head and take it to the extreme. I mean, I've heard of churches who make promises from the pulpit that if you are a member of their church, that you will not die before the age of 90 years old. All you have to do is give money, become an official member, and you'll live healthy and wealthy.
Man, that is, you know, I have found, you know, in my years of doing missions, I've discovered this, that it's almost like a pyramid scheme. And that over the years, people do not last long in those prosperity movements, because sooner or later they begin to realize that the only ones that are prospering are the ones who are preaching it.
Absolutely.
And the farther you're down on the line there, the less any of this is going to have any impact on you, on your life. Wow. And it's important, you know, that we concentrate not on just preaching about things that are wrong, about preaching the gospel. That's what's important. And the full counsel of God. And yet sometimes we have to expose these things.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what else?
Yeah, so just very busy. A lot of travel. A lot of preaching opportunities.
Now, India, you've now been working there for several years. How has it changed? What's the current situation like?
Yeah, when I immediately think of India, I think of a couple of candles in a sea of hostility and darkness. I mean, that's what comes to mind. Hostility is what has really changed over the last 5 years.
You mean to the gospel, those candles for the gospel?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, over the last 5 years, I think 6 years ago, India ranked 31st in Christian persecution. This year, coming into 2019, they made the top 10. So a lot more persecution is taking place. In fact, if you look at violent crimes versus Christians or against Christians, you'll see that India ranks in the top 5 or 6. So India is changing. But
are there any cases or instances that you could share with us of people that have suffered?
The week before that I actually put my feet on the ground in India, I heard the story. Just a Christian man, not even a pastor, just a Christian man in a Hindu village was pulled from his home in the night. His daughters were crying. They watch him get loaded up in the back of a Jeep, and then they drive off. The next day, midday, I mean, right in the middle of the day, they dumped his body in the middle of a busy intersection, decapitated. And, I mean, it made national news. I mean, and you just hear about that stuff all over, whether it's in the South or whether it's in the North. Parents show up, or people show up at the church, and the pastor's hanged in the sanctuary. I mean, just constant persecution.
Wow. Wow. And is there any sign of this letting up, or does it look like it's going to increase?
No, it doesn't look like there's any sign of it letting up as of now. It looks like it's continuing to increase, and radical Hinduism is being more emboldened, primarily because of the leadership that keeps getting in the office, the BJP, which is a radical Hindu party. So, yeah, I wish we could say that it was softening, but it hasn't shown any sign.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, even the Muslims who live in India have suffered persecution.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been on a street where it's predominantly Muslim. I mean, everybody has got head coverings on, and I felt more safe on that street walking down it than I have in other villages where it's just dominated by Hinduism.
Wow. You just wouldn't think that.
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't.
Wow. And what would the brothers tell us about how to pray for them?
Yeah, faithfulness.
Yeah.
Courage and boldness.
Yeah.
And you see that in their lives. I mean, one of our supported missionaries on Saturday night, he takes a group of young men and they still go preaching on the streets and handing out tracts, even though they know that at any moment someone could rise up and really do a lot of damage.
It's really not a question of if, it's just a question of when, isn't it?
A question of when.
Wow. And, you know, sometimes, you know, here in the United States, we'll read biographies and read accounts of people who suffer or have even been martyred. And I think wrongly so, just see the glory in it and don't see the pain, don't see the fear. That when you're in situations where people are going to come against you physically, at that moment, it's not that all of a sudden the power of God comes over you and you're unshakable, but you can feel very abandoned. Absolutely. And that you must walk by faith and face this crowd. And that another thing that's important is how often the enemy slanders, that you're not necessarily persecuted as a Christian, but some trumped up charge against you just to turn the people against you.
Yeah. Wow. I was talking to one pastor in the village where we preached at the 2-day conference. And I was talking to him and he told me the story. He said that one day he was at the park, you know, he was out sharing his faith and he saw a Sikh sitting in the park. So he goes over and he hands him a gospel tract and starts talking to him. And this was a big guy, over 6 feet tall. And this was a little, tiny little evangelist. And anyway, he reads it for a little bit, a couple minutes, and just stands up angrily. And he grabs the guy by the throat and picks him straight up and slams him back to the ground. And the pastor said, "I didn't know what to do." He said, "I was terrified." He said, "So the only thing I knew what to do is just curl up in a ball and just start weeping." He said, "So I just started weeping and praying to myself." And anyway, the Sikh walks away, sees his reaction, and is moved by his reaction, gets up, goes back to him, dusts him off, and apologizes to him and says, "Why don't you come to my house, and I'll make you a meal, and we'll sit down and eat together." Well, the pastor said, I was timid. I was afraid because is this a setup? Is he going to take me to his house, and this is all a setup? He's going to invite his friends over, and they're going to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
But he said something to him. He said, "I need to go." So he did. He went. And he sat down with the man's family, and the man said, "Listen, this man has something to say to us." So he was able to preach the gospel there to the man's family for 30 minutes. The man shook his hand, apologized again, thanked him, and then he left. He heard like a week or two later that entire family converted to Christianity and are now serving in a church in New Delhi.
That is amazing, because being a Sikh, it's also very dangerous to become a Christian.
Yeah, absolutely. And
I remember I was in Nepal years ago, and between preaching, I thought I would just wander in and out of shops, you know, and pray for an opportunity to witness and just look for an open door. And I walked into a shop where they sold cloth. Mm-hmm. And there was a Sikh there. And again, he was big. Many of them are, you know, 6'4", 6'5". And I started talking to him, and then I began to share the gospel. And I remember how intently he listened. He was, you know, you can tell, he was genuinely interested. And we had gone on for about 10 minutes, and I was so excited. I think, man, this is a wonderful opportunity. And then all of a sudden, the door opened up. And I had my back to the door, but I could see the man's face with whom I was speaking. And the moment that bell rung on that door, it's like his face turned to terror. And he jumped up and walked away and walked towards the door. And it was another Sikh coming in, you know, with the head dress and everything. And he kind of looked at me like, "No more." And you could tell just the terror. But at the same time, I take it, it was providential. I got to share the gospel with him. Who knows what happened? Yeah. All right. Well, tell me some of the highlights of the trip.
Yeah, the highlights of the trip. Well, really, listening to the men and sitting down with them. I think that's always one of the highlights on every trip that I take. But there was one particular testimony that really just kind of stopped me in my tracks. Mm-hmm. I met this young man, probably late 20s, just really bright-eyed. I mean, kind of like what you would read about Stephen in the scriptures, just the face of an angel. I mean, just like full of life. And so a couple of days later, I had a translator and I asked him his testimony. And what I heard was amazing, absolutely amazing. I mean, he told me that his father had passed away when he was at the age of 13. And by the age of 14, he's working hard in the fields. Just him and his mother out in the fields all day long trying to earn enough money to survive and also to put their younger brother through school. Well, out there in the fields, he gets influenced by older men. He has a little extra money in his pocket, so he starts drinking, starts consuming alcohol, and his life just takes a downward spiral at that point in time. becomes an alcoholic, becomes a drunk, and becomes filled with rage, hates life. And one day, at the age of 24, he's outside his home, and this drunk man just keeps badgering their family. And he tells him, if you don't leave, I'm going to hurt you. And the guy would not leave, so he picks up this heavy stick, he describes it, that was leaning against his house, picks it up, and beats the man to death.
To death?
To death. Kills the man right there in front of the house. So, obviously, he gets thrown into prison. Now, you would think he would stay in prison for a long time.
Right.
But he was only in prison for 1 month. He had influence with some of the tribal leaders. And so they let him out of prison just as long as he agreed to pay this large sum of money to the family. So, which is what he did, and it pretty much bankrupted his whole family. And then he just describes his life as having that heavy weight upon his mind that he took another man's life. And so he added drugs, continued in his drinking, and then the people in the village started making fun of him. And a group of men in particular started mocking him. So he had to leave. So he gets up, he runs away to and starts living in this abandoned house. But he comes up with a plan. He says to himself, I'm going to buy a bunch of knives, I'm going to sharpen them, and I'm going to go back to that village, and I'm going to kill every single one of those men who made fun of me. And if I die in the process, so be it. I kind of hope I do, so this whole miserable life will end. Well, that abandoned house happened to be next to the church of Heart Cry Missionary Samuel B. And so, so they get to talking. They meet each other. Samuel starts sharing the gospel. He's interested, staying up to 1 o'clock in the morning, just really ministering to this man. And this happened 4 months ago, so the man gets converted. He had confession of Christ. He repents of his sins, places his faith in Christ 4 months ago. And you can just see the light upon this man's face. It's really amazing. But here's one of the more amazing parts is the Lord has gifted this man who didn't even have a formal education, who started working in the fields at the age of 14 years old. He's just gifted him with a special mind. So in order to fight temptations, he says to himself, well, I'm just going to start memorizing scriptures. And so he opens up and he has the book of Revelation chapter 1. And he is just enthralled with Revelation chapter 1. And he says he memorized it in a little over an hour.
Well, that's got me beat.
Yeah. And so then he memorizes Romans chapter 8. And then all 66 books of the Bible. And then all the chapters in 66 in each book of the Bible. How many chapters are in each book? So it is amazing. His mind and everything you put in front of him, he's reading. And then it doesn't even end there, the story. So his mom gets worried about him in the village. And she comes out to meet him. And when she meets him and spends a couple of days with him, she just starts weeping. And she starts talking to Samuel. And she says, I don't even know this man. I've never seen him before like this. And so then she says, truly, there is power in Christ and Christ alone. I've never seen this before. And so she now is attending the church 2 months back, every service, asking good questions. So that's the highlight. I mean, that's the story that just grabs your heart and just keeps you pressing forward.
That is absolutely amazing. I think the word there, the power, there's power. And so often, you know, in our circles, we talk about truth, truth, truth. And that is so essential.
Yeah.
Christianity is not less than truth, but it is more than truth.
Absolutely.
It's this transforming power of Jesus Christ to take a life and make it completely new.
Amen.
Wow.
I mean, so when you look at the darkness in India, it can become really overwhelming. I mean, 1.3 billion people.
Yeah.
And the statistic is, it is estimated that 4 out of every 5 people who live in India will never, ever meet a Christian. Think about that. 4 out of every 5 of this 1.2 billion people will grow up, live their life, and die having never even met a Christian. I mean, It's almost overwhelming. I mean, even in that village that I was in, I was talking to the pastor, and he said that there are 1,200 villages surrounding him, and 700 of those of that 1,200 have no gospel witness, none, zero. In fact, he said he doesn't even know of a Christian who's ever even stepped foot in that village. And he said of the other 500 who do have a gospel witnesses, it's not even the real gospel. It's a bunch of lies. It's a man-centered gospel, not a
prosperity type of gospel.
But, you know, even when we look at the overwhelming statistics and we see the people's faces, we do know that God is there and He's planting His church.
Yeah.
And we see a small group of candles of lighthouses really truly being planted amidst the darkness. And that has probably been one of the most encouraging things, is seeing men grow in their faith. Now they're starting to network together, and as technology pours into India, now they're having more better access to the world, and the English language is opening up new doors. So, yeah, I really find it very encouraging, even though it is a miserable position.
Tell me, how is the translation of the ESV Study Bible? How's
yeah, it's going. Yeah, so at the very beginning of this year, they got the Old Testament, all the notes translated. They have all the articles translated. They've got the concordance finished, and they started on the New Testament this year.
So this is a project that we started at Heart Cry, what was it, 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago, and it's not expected to get finished until the summer of 2020.
Still, though, to have a solid study Bible in Hindi. And what is the population of Hindi-speaking people?
422 million.
That's a substantial number,
yeah,
isn't it?
422 million people without a study Bible.
Yeah. Yeah. That book, that will be gold to many, many people. And it will solve some of these theological issues also, hopefully.
Absolutely. I hope so.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's something that, you know, we can leave behind. Even when we're dead and gone, someone can find it in a bookshop, pick it up, and understand.
Wow. Well, any last things you would like to say?
No, just continue to pray.
Yeah.
Continue to pray. I mean, the harvest is great, the laborers are few, but we know the Lord of the harvest. So just continue to pray.
Yes. Well, thank you. And to all of you, I hope this has been a blessing, but I hope also it's been a wake-up call. We're not at a time of peace. We're in a tremendous battle, not a battle of arms, a spiritual battle. And what is the greatest need? Godly men and women who know their God, who know the Scriptures, who know how to bend the knee, how to tarry before God, to pray for missionaries, to possibly become missionaries, to support missionaries. This is the commission that has been given to the church, to go out into all the world and to preach the gospel, not to some, but to every creature. It doesn't matter what profession, what employment that you have. You must realize this is the primary goal. Take the gospel to the world. William Carey, the great missionary who went to India so many decades ago, he told the men back home, he said, "I will go down into the mine, down into the well, but who will hold the rope for me when I go down?" And that's the way it is. You either go to the field, go down into the well as a missionary, or you hold the rope for those who go down. Please remember that. Please search your heart. Please ask yourself, what am I doing in the Great Commission? What has it cost me? Where are the scars of battle? Well, again, thank you. It's been a tremendous blessing to be here. May God bless you.